From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, a busy day on Capitol Hill, day two of the Kavanaugh confirmation hearing. Civil but revealing exchanges today between Judge Kavanaugh and members of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Terry Jeffrey, editor-in-chief of CNS News, joins me in just a moment. And while the Kavanaugh hearings were the focus of all the buzz on Capitol Hill, tech giants were also on Capitol Hill today, fielding questions from lawmakers. Facebook's COO, Sheryl Sandberg, met with the Senate Select Intelligence Committee concerning potential Russian election meddling. And over on the House side, Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey appeared before the House Energy and Commerce Committee to address social media bias against conservatives. Well, the question is, did Twitter's Jack Dorsey convince lawmakers there is no bias against conservatives? We'll ask Congressman Tim Walberg of Michigan, one of the lawmakers in the hearing with Dorsey earlier today. Also, another round of midterm elections yesterday, this time in Massachusetts, a deep blue state that swung even more to the left on Tuesday. Expert researcher and pollster Scott Rasmussen will be here with his analysis. And we'll have extra credit today as we take advantage of the Kavanaugh hearings to discuss the Constitution and related matters. Ken Kulkowski joins me again today, and we'll be taking your calls as class will be in session later in Washington Watch. Okay, the website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T. Perkins. And let me remind you, coming up September the 21st, 22nd, and 23rd, the Values Voter Summit. It's filling up quick, but there is still room. If you register now, go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. Okay, on Capitol Hill today, the liberal protesters continued, not quite at the pace they were yesterday, but they continued to try to interrupt day two of the Supreme Court confirmation hearings for Judge Brett Kavanaugh. During his opening remarks, Senate Judiciary Committee Senator Grassley, said that over 70 protesters in the audience had been arrested on Tuesday, but that he was going to allow protesters to or individuals to still be in the audience and that they had a right to the freedom of speech, just not interrupting the hearings. With us now is Terry Jeffrey, editor-in-chief of CNS News. Terry, you've been covering the hearings, watching them as they have unfolded before us.
Yeah, pretty interesting event.
a little calmer today, but revealing in terms of what is the focus of Senate Democrats who are drilling down. Seems like they're working off the same sheet of music, really zeroing in on four issues, primarily on the issue of Roe v. Wade. That was front and center today.
Without question. I think Roe v. Wade is their major concern. I also think, in general, that they really don't think they have a strong case on public policy against Judge Kavanaugh. That's why they started out yesterday going over the question of what papers had been released the night before and what papers had not been released. And they were rooting for the protesters who were trying to make the debate about something else. But of the substantive issues they've gotten into and they've focused on, clearly Roe v. Wade and where they think Brett Kavanaugh might go on the abortion issue is the number one thing.
And as I've watched the exchange today, he has, I think, handled himself pretty well, relying, you know, very heavily on precedent, judicial precedent, the court's precedent on this issue of Roe v. Wade and other issues, not really indicating anything new than other than what we've seen him say in the past.
Right. I mean, you know, obviously Supreme Court nominees are coached to answer questions the way that Kavanaugh's been answering them today. And they've been doing it ever since Bob Bork was, quote-unquote, Borked back in the 1980s, when he went up there and was much more candid. I will say this, Tony. I think if you look at Brett I believe Kavanaugh is going to get confirmed. And I think the Democrats already know that he's going to get confirmed. If they had anything they could really hit him with, they would have done it by now. I don't see Susan Collins or Murkowski defecting from the Republican side. I have no doubt John Kyle is going to vote to confirm. And I think there are a good number of Democrats who are running for re-election in red states who really believe they have no it would be a major detriment to them politically to vote against Kavanaugh. So he's going to the Supreme Court. But I would say this from the point of view of a pro-life conservative and someone who believes in the Constitution as it was written and therefore believes that Roe v. Wade was wrong both constitutionally and morally, that it's not absolutely clear that Judge Kavanaugh is going to be on the right side of that issue on the court. And I think the reason for that is if you look at Judge Kavanaugh's record, and there's a case that they talked about today. In fact, he and Durbin went back and forth on it for quite a bit.
Right.
It's Garza v. Hargan. It's a case where a 17-year-old illegal alien girl from a country they have never revealed, but she's not a U.S. citizen, obviously, was intercepted by the Border Patrol, illegally crossing the border, and immediately put in detention and immediately discovered to be pregnant. The ACLU, she wanted an abortion. The ACLU took up her case and it very quickly went to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia, where, of course, Judge Kavanaugh serves. But so also does Judge Karen Henderson. And when that case came before Kavanaugh's court, Texas argued in an amicus brief that was joined by several other states that there was no direct Supreme Court precedent that indicated whether or not a person such as this illegal alien caught at the border had a right to an abortion in the United States. But there were precedents that governed how rights were extended to people who were illegally in the United States or who were not citizens. And Texas flat out argued that there is no right to an abortion for an illegal alien caught at the border, and that this girl therefore did not have a right to an abortion, and that furthermore, if courts said that she did, then she also had a right to contribute to political campaigns, and she had a Second Amendment right to go buy a gun and keep and bear arms. Now, at the appeals court level, Judge Henderson agreed with what Texas argued. She said there's absolutely no way, there's no precedent saying this illegal alien has a right to abortion. The U.S. Justice Department did not have the courage to take a position, and they demurred. They, in fact, the Justice Department would not answer
right.
whether or not they thought Planned Parenthood v. Casey, which was Justice Kennedy's opinion reaffirming Roe, applied to an illegal alien caught at the border. Judge Kavanaugh wrote an opinion where he sort of split the difference. And he said that he would apply Planned Parenthood v. Casey, which was written by his hero, Justice Anthony Kennedy, for whom he clerked in 1993, 1 year after Kennedy joined with Souter and Sandra Day O'Connor in writing Planned Parenthood. And he said that whereas the majority of the court was wrong in saying this girl had a right to an immediate abortion, Kavanaugh wrote on the appeals court that she had a right to an expeditious abortion and that the government may be in a position while they were detaining her to have to allow her to have an abortion before she got too far along in her pregnancy to have one. And in discussing that with Durbin today, Kavanaugh more or less reiterated that position, that he wasn't stopping her from having an abortion, and he recognized that the state, the government, might have to facilitate this illegal alien having an abortion, which I think is a highly problematical decision by him. And as I said, differed dramatically from what Texas argued and what Judge Henderson argued.
That's the one issue that I think conservatives pointed to with concern about his selection, his nomination by the president. You know, when he makes reference to Supreme Court precedent, that's one thing when you're on an appellate court level versus being on the Supreme Court yourself. You can revisit those cases based upon the facts that are before you. So while he leans heavily on the and aligns himself with precedent, doesn't mean that he can't revisit it as the Supreme Court has in cases in the past.
Exactly. You know, I can't sit here and predict that I think that Judge Kavanaugh will go wrong on Roe in the Supreme Court. He may go the right way, but I think there's also reason to worry that he may go the wrong way. And in his exchange with Durbin on this Garza v. Hargan case today, he did admit that there was no Supreme Court precedent that was directly on point, and that he said that the Planned Parenthood v. Casey opinion was analogous, and he made the argument from Planned Parenthood v. Casey, and he didn't take that opinion, so it is troubling. And I mean, I'll be very candid. I think that, you know, if you look at Judge Kavanaugh's record, I think this is a guy who for a long time has wanted to be on the Supreme Court. He's obviously very intelligent, and he obviously knows that if he had a very clear opinion, I think, quite frankly, if he had written Judge Henderson's opinion, it would have given the Democrats a lot more ammunition to go after him. But on the flip side of that, Tony, there was a real girl with a real baby, and she had an abortion the day after Kavanaugh wrote that opinion. It wasn't because of Kavanaugh's opinion. It was because of the majority of the court and a technicality where the ACLU people were able to sneak her out. But there was a real baby that was alive in that woman's, in that girl's womb when Kavanaugh wrote that opinion. So there was more to consider there than simply what the political ramifications were of what he wrote or argued.
Yeah, without question. And I know there, well, I can't go into all the details, but there were those working very intently to find the girl a sponsor so that she could be, I mean, he described her situation there being alone, a minor, not having the ability to talk to anyone about this. And there were those working within government to give her the best possible outcomes. Unfortunately, it was not the outcome that we had hoped for. And let me play a clip because I want to get your thoughts on this. This is he was asked in an exchange by Senator Graham, and he talked about some of the things he does on his own. Listen to this discussion here.
Tell me about that. What interaction do you have with homeless people?
Senator, I regularly serve meals at Catholic Charities at 10th and G with Father John Ensler, who's the head of Catholic Charities. Matthew 25, try to follow the lesson of serving the least fortunate among us. You know, when I was hungry, you gave me food. Thirsty, you gave me drink. Stranger, and you welcomed me. Naked, and you clothed me. Sick, and you cared for me. In prison, and you visited me. Six groups that's not exclusive, but that's a good place to start with your charitable works in your private time.
You know, he made references to that when he was introduced by the president, his nomination. Is this to encourage or to persuade conservatives, or is this to humanize him in the eyes of the public?
Well, you know, I think it is. Obviously, I think there's a public relations strategy they've used with Kavanaugh from the very beginning, which doesn't bother me at all, to emphasize his Catholic faith and the works he's done for charity in his family and the fact that he coaches his daughter's basketball teams, which are all good things. And I think it is good to you know, show the human side of this person and to give some sense of his character. And I don't think that anybody here has questioned Judge Kavanaugh's intellect, his academic background, the fact that he clearly does understand the law, and that he seems to have led an exemplary personal life. And those are all good things. And I think they're going to play into why he will be confirmed and why you're going to see some Democrats vote for him, because they can't build a case to go the other way based on what they've seen about this guy.
I think that's true. In fact, yesterday Lindsey Graham said the same on the program here. Terry Jeffrey, as always, great to have you on. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Tony.
All right, Terry Jeffrey with CNS News. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. I do think that in looking through the list that the president put forward in the election, that Judge Kavanaugh is one that's going to be very difficult for the Democrats to defeat. And, in fact, they won't. And I think that's one of the reasons they selected him. All right, Twitter on Capitol Hill before the House Energy and Commerce Committee. Tim Walberg, congressman from Michigan, was in the hearing, and he joins us next. Don't go away.
Do you feel out of touch with what's going on in our nation's capital? Do you want to make a difference this summer? Well, now you can. Family Research Council's Stand Firm mobile app is a new tool that is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on important issues with just the tap of a screen, sign up to organize culture impact teams in churches across the country, and share the latest legislative alerts with family and friends. You can listen to Washington Watch live with Tony Perkins or read the daily Washington Update to stay engaged and informed on issues facing our country. Join now in building a network of activists as we stand firm together for His kingdom. Go to frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today. Again, that's frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today.
With everything that's going on in the world, it's easy to feel out of the loop. Here at Family Research Council, we want to help you stay informed on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. Get access to information fast by visiting our website and connecting with us on social media. Always be in the know by following us on Twitter, Instagram, and watching us live on Facebook. Download our app to access our FRCA's voter guide and contact your congressman with just a tap of the screen. You can also listen to Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins and read the Daily Washington Update to stay engaged on the issues facing our country today. Have questions? Contact us anytime by visiting FRC.org. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that. So what are you waiting for? Get the information you need to make a difference for biblical values and connect with FRC today. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that.
Hello? Can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. In the wake of a consistent pattern of censorship by tech companies of lawful but politically incorrect viewpoints, particularly those of conservatives and Christians, what is the legal status of digital free expression? Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? The panel speakers were Congressman Marsha Blackburn, Civil Liberties Attorney Craig Parshall, and Brent Scorum, Senior Research Fellow in the Technology Policy Program at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice. Again, that's frc.org/voice.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Okay, let me just remind you, coming up very, very soon, the Values Voter Summit, September the 21st, 22nd, and 23rd. The summit's filling up quickly. A lot of people want to be at the summit this year. To find out who's going to be there, you go to TonyPerkins.com, follow the links over, and you can also make plans to be there yourself. Find more at TonyPerkins.com. Okay, the House Energy and Commerce Committee held a hearing today. In fact, I think it's still going on with Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey on the company's algorithms and their content moderation. It was titled Twitter Transparency and Accountability. The House's conversation explored deeply partisan topics around political bias and censorship, which has come to the forefront. Google refused to send top executives before Congress, so I give Dorsey credit for showing up and answering some, I think, pretty tough questions. With us now is Congressman Tim Walberg. He represents the 7th Congressional District. Well, I just got word he's still in the committee, so we're waiting to see if he's able to slip out of the committee to make the call to join us. Anyway, I've got some clips from the hearing earlier today, where Dorsey was asked specifically about the issue of the bias, what was taking place. I think this is Congressman Joe Barton of Texas. Listen to this.
Do you discriminate more on philosophy, like anti-conservative versus pro-liberal?
No. Our policies and our algorithms don't take into consideration any affiliation, philosophy, or viewpoint.
That's hard to stomach. We wouldn't be having this discussion if there wasn't a general agreement that your company has discriminated against conservatives, most of whom happen to be Republicans.
I believe that we have found impartial outcomes, and those are what we intend to fix and continue to measure.
Again, that was Congressman Joe Barton of Texas asking Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey about what certainly appears to be bias in nature, where there was some discussion about the shadow banning and limiting the exposure of conservative content. Of course, Dorsey batting that down, saying that these algorithms were, impartial. They were not intended to do this, but the effect is that it did. In fact, the hearing is still going on. In fact, just got word Tim Walberg is, I guess he is in cycle to ask questions, so he's actually asking questions right now. We got another clip from the hearing earlier that took place, a question that was asked earlier during the hearing. Let's play that second clip. Yeah, let's go to, I think it's Dorsey 2. Okay, let's go to 1.
As shadow banning, is it only because they complained that that got fixed?
It's a completely fair point. And, you know, we are regularly looking at the outcomes of our algorithms. It wasn't just the voices of members of Congress. We saw, as we rolled this system out, a general conversation about it. And sometimes we need to roll these out and see what happens, because we're not going to be able to test every single outcome in the right way. So we did get a lot of feedback and a lot of conversations about it, and that is what prompted more digging and an understanding of what we were actually doing and whether it was the right approach.
And that was the question regarding the shadow banning and how that's working. It's really kind of hard to conceive that this, the outcome is just arbitrary, that somehow it discriminates against, the effect is that it discriminates against conservatives more so than liberals, and that is unintentional. It just happens. But anyway, I give Dorsey credit for showing up on Capitol Hill. As I said, Google has refused to send top executives before Congress. And Facebook over there, on the Senate side, not discussing the same issue of the bias nature, although I wouldn't be surprised if it did come up, talking more about the Russia meddling in the elections. Anyway, as I mentioned, Tim Walberg still in the committee hearing with Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey, and he's actually asking questions right now, so we're not going to be able to most likely get him on. We've discussed this quite extensively, and I think it's going to continue to be an issue, especially going into the election, and how the effect, okay, we don't know if it's intentional, but the effect is that conservative speech through the algorithms are being essentially choked down to where they're not being seen as many people. Now, that's a completely different issue than the limiting of certain topics, you know, what they call or deem hate speech, that they are taking off because it violates, quote unquote, their community standards. That's a whole nother issue. This is simply, again, kind of limiting the access that people have to what members were arguing today was conservative content, that somehow their formulas restrict that more than access to liberal content. And then there's the whole, as I said, the whole issue of some of the outside groups that they work with to label certain speech beyond their community standards, or in effect violating their community standards. So, as I said, going to continue to be a topic of discussion as social media has really become the virtual public square where people gather. All right. Not going to get Tim. He's still in the committee hearing. We're going to take up elections next related to social media, as more and more people are communicating via social media when it comes to elections. Interesting trend in the Democratic Party. They are going even more to the left, as evidenced by yesterday's outcome in Massachusetts. Scott Rasmussen joins us next to give us his take on election trends in this primary season. That's next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
feel out of touch with what's going on in our nation's capital? Do you want to make a difference this summer? Well, now you can. Family Research Council's Stand Firm mobile app is a new tool that is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on important issues with just the tap of a screen, sign up to organize culture impact teams in churches across the country, and share the latest legislative alerts with family and friends. You can listen to Washington Watch live with Tony Perkins or read the daily Washington Update to stay engaged and informed on issues facing our country. Join now in building a network of activists as we stand firm together for His kingdom. Go to frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today. Again, that's frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today.
With everything that's going on in the world, it's easy to feel out of the loop. Here at Family Research Council, we want to help you stay informed on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. Get access to information fast by visiting our website and connecting with us on social media. Always be in the know by following us on Twitter, Instagram, and watching us live on Facebook. Download our app to access our FRCA's voter guide and contact your congressman with just a tap of the screen. You can also listen to Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins and read the Daily Washington Update to stay engaged on the issues facing our country today. Have questions? Contact us anytime by visiting frc.org. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that. So what are you waiting for? Get the information you need to make a difference for biblical values and connect with FRC today. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, yesterday, Massachusetts featured four key House primaries, just one of which had a single Republican candidate. In the race for the U.S. Senate, three Republicans vied for a chance to run against Senator Elizabeth Warren in November. And in the governor's race, a Republican is thought to have a good chance of winning. But a longtime Democrat member of Congress, Michael Capiano, conceded the race early in the evening to challenger Ayanna Pressley in the state's only majority minority district. Now, this is quite significant because this is Michael is not a moderate by any means. But Ayanna is even more of a liberal, and this shows this civil war that's taking place within the Democratic Party. With us now is Scott Rasmussen, researcher and pollster, publisher of the ScottRasmussen.com daily tracking poll, and author of The Sun is Still Rising. Politics has failed, but America will not. Scott, welcome back to Washington Watch.
It's always great to be with you. Interesting times.
It is, and you've had a couple of weeks to kind of catch your breath here during the month of August. What are we seeing now in these primaries that have been taking place? Is that blue wave picking up again?
Well, there's a couple of things going on. You know, you just mentioned the Massachusetts primary results from yesterday, and what we're seeing in the Democratic Party is very much a sense of tone mattering more than just checking boxes on issues. It's a different dynamic, but somewhat similar to the fact that there are some people on the Republican Party who simply wanted Donald Trump to be president because he would take it to the establishment in ways that others wouldn't. And I think this is leading to a divide in the Democratic Party. And it's also leading to something nationwide that we have two teams out there who are passionately committed to the idea that this is a fight between good and evil this November that will determine the fate of the nation. And what should be a little concerning to all of us is most Americans don't quite buy into that. They're somewhere in the middle. They may have favorites but they don't like the tone. They don't like the you know, all good or evil connotations of it. And we're forming a big disconnect between these activists and the majority of American voters.
So what happens in the general election? I mean, you see, this is not the first time. Same thing happened in New York, where Cortez defeated the incumbent there. Are we going to see, I mean, a stark contrast in the general elections between left and right?
You will certainly see stark contrast presented by both sides. And in districts like the ones we're talking about right now won't make a whole lot of difference. You know, most of the districts, somewhere around 85% of them are pretty solidly for one party or the other. What you'll start to see is the districts that are more competitive, and most of them are districts right now on the House level with Republicans in them. You're going to see people trying to candidates from both sides trying to take that rough edge off and be a little more open to more moderate perspectives. And so you'll look to places like Bucks County, Pennsylvania, and others to see whether this blue wave materializes. Right now, if the election were held today, the Democrats are certainly likely to win a majority in the House. Having said that, there's a long way to go until November, and there's a big difference between a Democratic majority of a few votes, a handful of votes, and perhaps something more significant.
So what are the factors you think play into that between now and November?
Well, at the House level, a lot of things that are going to play into it revolve around Donald Trump, because, and this is not because he is so much different than presidents before him. It's because that's what always happens in a midterm election. Barack Obama 8 years ago really struggled. His party got beat badly in the midterms, and almost always there's a loss of seats. So that's going to be the biggest issue. Republicans are hoping that a stronger economy will help minimize those losses. And I think the other thing that could help the Republicans is a sense of the Democratic Party going too far to the left or too much getting overplaying their hand either on economic issues or on a desire to impeach the president or something like that. Those sorts of things will turn off a lot of those undecided voters. At the Senate level, by the way, the Supreme Court and Donald Trump is the biggest thing that will come into play, and especially in the seats where the Republicans have a pretty good chance of taking over a Democratic seat.
Is it just my observation, or does it look like America is becoming more polarized politically?
Politically, we are absolutely more polarized. The parties are drawing further apart and more clearly defining themselves as not the other guys. And we're also becoming more polarized between those who are politically obsessed and the rest of the nation. So there's a big gap there.
Scott, we're up against a break. Can you hold that for just a second?
Yes.
And stay with me over the break, and I want you to finish that thought, because it's an interesting topic. In fact, we might spend a whole day sometime just talking about that. All right, folks, don't go away. Scott's going to hang on for just a moment. Then class will be in session a little bit later here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
Feel out of touch with what's going on in our nation's capital? Do you want to make a difference this summer? Well, now you can. Family Research Council's Stand Firm mobile app is a new tool that is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on important issues with just the tap of a screen, sign up to organize culture impact teams in churches across the country, and share the latest legislative alerts with family and friends. You can listen to Washington Watch live with Tony Perkins or read the daily Washington Update to stay engaged and informed on issues facing our country. Join now in building a network of activists as we stand firm together for His kingdom. Go to frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today. Again, that's frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today.
With everything that's going on in the world, it's easy to feel out of the loop. Here at Family Research Council, we want to help you stay informed on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. Get access to information fast by visiting our website and connecting with us on social media. Always be in the know by following us on Twitter, Instagram, and watching us live on Facebook. Download our app to access our FRCA's voter guide and contact your congressman with just a tap of the screen. You can also listen to Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins and read the Daily Washington Update to stay engaged on the issues facing our country today. Have questions? Contact us anytime by visiting frc.org. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that. So what are you waiting for? Get the information you need to make a difference for biblical values and connect with FRC today. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that.
Hello? Can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. In the wake of a consistent pattern of censorship by tech companies of lawful but politically incorrect viewpoints, particularly those of conservatives and Christians, what is the legal status of digital free expression? Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? The panel speakers were Congressman Marsha Blackburn, Civil Liberties Attorney Craig Parshall, and Brent Scorum, Senior Research Fellow in the Technology Policy Program at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice. Again, that's frc.org/voice.
I'm Tony Perkins, and you are listening to Washington Watch. My guest, Scott Rasmussen, finishing up our conversation. Scott, we're talking about the political partisanship of the nation, how we're divided. You were continuing that thought on other areas, and I guess ideologically how we're divided. I want you to finish that thought, and I got one more question for you.
Sure. Well, there is a tremendous gap between people who live and breathe politics and the rest of the nation. And, you know, one part of it is the people who live and breathe politics think that the politicians are supposed to lead the nation and the rest of the society is supposed to trail along, whereas most other Americans see government as playing an essential role but recognize that the private sector has a lot to do with where we're heading as a nation and individual freedoms are more important. In fact, 2 out of 3 Americans rate freedom is more important than democracy. So there is this tension that we're fighting between people, again, who the ones I call the politically obsessed and the rest of the nation, and they're not talking to each other very much, and that's a big problem.
So as that gap grows, do some then that are not that interested basically just shut it out because the volume's gotten too loud?
Absolutely. They shut it out, and when somebody tries to bring it up, you can't even have a logical discussion because their filter just goes up. And it doesn't matter for some people whether you're on the Republican side or the Democratic side. Just to give you a sense of scale, 26% of voters right now, 1 out of 4, say things wouldn't be any different in the country if Hillary Clinton was in the White House. They have just become so jaded and cynical about the way the process works that they look elsewhere.
Now, that's certainly interesting, and we could have a long discussion about that. But you said something I just want to quickly ask you about, that some people more concerned, I think you said 2 out of 3, more concerned about democracy or freedom than democracy.
They said freedom is more important than democracy, yes.
I mean, how do we secure freedom without democracy?
Well, you know, I think one of the things that happens over time is we take these words and we begin to morph them together. When most Americans think of democracy or our system or the republic that was founded, they think of a particular mix of
things. It includes, first of all, majority rule, the consent of the governed. But it's more than just 50% plus one can do anything that they want to the rest of the nation. There is a strong belief in individual rights. 69% believe that freedom of speech is absolutely essential. 68% believe that freedom of religion is absolutely essential. And sometimes, again, we like to probe which of these things is really more important. Is it more important that the majority can do whatever they want anytime, or is it more important that we respect freedoms? And that's what we tried to find with that particular question, and we're exploring it in a lot of additional ways. Obviously, they go hand in hand. You can't have you can't ultimately maintain freedom without some level of consent of the government.
Right, right. But very interesting. Very interesting indeed. Scott, as always, great to talk with you. Thanks so much for coming on. Look forward to talking to you again soon.
Look forward to it. Thank you.
All right, Scott Rasmussen, very insightful. I like to know what people are thinking. All right, class is in session. Best-selling author Ken Klukowski joins me now. Professor Klukowski, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Great to be with you, Tony. Thank you.
All right, I'm gonna open up the phone lines for those that want to ask questions about today's hearings or about the whole process. You know, we had a lot of calls that we didn't get to yesterday, as we had
which continue
Tuesday.
To go on right now. In fact, as Senator Dick Blumenthal is hammering out abortion with the nominee, and of course, whenever Senator Blumenthal is engaged on that topic, the sparks tend to fly.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about that topic here in just a moment. Let me get about the phone number, 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. I know we had a number of callers yesterday. We weren't able to get to your calls as we had Constitution Tuesday, so we carried it over today with the backdrop of the Kavanaugh hearing, second day of those hearings. So let's talk about that, Ken, while we wait for some folks to call in. Abortion was front and center today. Dianne Feinstein asking about it, almost every Democratic senator getting at their time at the mic. This was an issue that was front and center for them.
Well, that's right. It's come up with several senators. And again, as we're speaking right now, I hope all of your listeners are listening to you rather than the hearings. But if they are listening into the hearings, they'll see again, a prominent liberal senator and the nominee going at it right now. On the topic of abortion. So it keeps on coming up through the day, and there's a couple more senators later in tonight where I think it's going to come up yet again. And that's because, and this gets to what conservative justices have said about abortion for decades now, where they have said there is nothing in the text or structure or history of the Constitution about this. It looks like a naked power grab for this court to usurp democracy by just declaring this constitutional right out of whole cloth, shutting down the democratic process where people cannot debate these things with their lawmakers about what sort of abortion laws that they do or do not want. And instead, it's a small number, 5 out of 9, of unelected, politically unaccountable judges declaring this to be the case. And they say, you know, this really gives people, this gives everyday citizens a misunderstanding as to what our role is and what the separation of powers are in our Constitution. When we make a decision like this, claim it's in the Constitution in invisible ink that no one can read, and then just tell 320 million people that they have to live with it because we tell them so.
Let's talk about the response from Judge Kavanaugh to many of those questions regarding abortion today about Supreme Court precedent, precedent being very important. But it has a different meaning at the appellate court in the district court level than it does at the Supreme Court level. Those things can be revisited, as they have in the past, at the Supreme Court level.
That's right. Under the doctrine of stare decisis, that's a foundational part of the rule of law, and that came up in Judge Kavanaugh's very opening remarks today in his exchange with Chairman Chuck Grassley. He cited the Federalist number 78, talked about how the concept of precedent and stare decisis is rooted in the Constitution. It's for your listeners, stare decisis is a shorthand for a Latin phrase that means to let things that are decided remain decided. And what it means in English is that in our common law system, it is a constitutional policy that it is often, not always, and that's key, not always, but that often it is more important for a legal question to be settled than for it to necessarily be settled correctly. That the law needs to be predictable, it needs to be stable, so that everyone in the country can then rely upon a decision and structure their affairs accordingly, sometimes to tremendous cost, sometimes banking literally their lives on it. And so the idea is that once the Supreme Court has settled a matter, or in the lower courts, whenever they settle matters, but we tend not to think of that as precedent because we know higher courts could instantly overturn it, but that at the Supreme Court level, once a matter has been decided, that court in the future will adhere to that precedent unless there is an extraordinary reason to overrule it. And simply believing that the first decision was wrong does not count as an extraordinary reason. And then you get into a big body that, of course, we don't have time with, not just in this segment, but you could take a whole semester in law school about it, about all the rules and principles and tests that you use in terms of deciding whether or not to overrule a precedent. And in that invariably, in the Supreme Court nomination context, comes to the issue of abortion, to the 1973 decision Roe v. Wade, which was reaffirmed but then modified in the 1992 decision, Planned Parenthood versus Casey. And so the question becomes, should Roe or Casey be overruled? And that is, and for both sides, that is actually a tougher legal question for a judge than I think a lot of people would realize, in that you do have this decision that so many people so profoundly disagree with, but that at the same time has been reaffirmed multiple times by the highest court in the land, and that tens of millions of people literally rely upon in terms of lifestyle choices that they make. And so that came up throughout the day today. Judge Kavanaugh demonstrated his absolute mastery for all the nuances of the doctrines and precedents involved here. And of course, Democratic senators are trying to extract out of him whether he would have given an opportunity to overrule Roe. And he's not going there, just as he's not going there on any prior precedent of the Supreme Court that he's being asked about. He points out that these are important precedents, that they are longstanding precedents, but that, of course, the Supreme Court can always revisit precedent under extraordinary circumstances.
But oftentimes when they revisit these cases, as we've seen about every decade, they've taken up another abortion-related case, as you said, Planned Parenthood versus Casey. That limited what was created under Roe, did it not?
That's right. Casey downgraded Roe. Roe had made abortion a fundamental right. Casey indicated that it was not fundamental because it could be regulated in ways far beyond what the Constitution would permit for a fundamental right. So now you get into a whole distinction, again, not found in the text of the Constitution. So you get into murky and philosophical waters here. But the difference between fundamental rights versus non-fundamental rights, Roe had put forward a trimester framework that whichever three-month period during a nine-month pregnancy you're in gives you a different rule as to when abortion would be allowed. Casey got rid of all that, and it drew the line at viability and said that the rule for getting an abortion constitutionally was different before an unborn child was viable versus after viability. Conservative justices in dissenting from the Casey decision, it was a 5-4 decision, one of the things that they pointed out was – viability is at least in part a question of medical science. And as science becomes more advanced, you're going to have unborn children that will be viable at younger and younger ages. And how can the Constitution set up kind of this slide rule scale in terms of what sort of restrictions are allowed? So, yes, all of that came up today.
Well, and so in the future, you have a number of cases that are making their way to the, potentially making their way to the Supreme Court from states that are restricting abortion. Back to the heartbeat bill, for instance, is one of those. The court could revisit this from a standpoint of saying, yes, the state has an interest, as was pointed out in Planned Parenthood versus Casey. They could rule with the states, not fundamentally or not overturning Roe, but giving states more ability to regulate abortion, which in effect could eliminate it at certain state within the state based on what the state does.
Well, I'm glad you're raising the question, Tony, because I think the question of overruling Roe, I think that is when we look at one Democrat senator after another raise it, they're raising it as a boogeyman. They've been saying for 40 years that Republicans are going to overrule Roe. They've said that about every Republican nominee to the U.S. Supreme Court. And, of course, we know that with Sandra Day O'Connor and with Anthony Kennedy and with David Souter, it's not been the case. All of those Republican nominees voted to reaffirm Roe at once Kavanaugh is on the court, because I'm confident he will be confirmed. Out of the nine justices, there's only one who is on record saying that he would overrule Roe, and that's Clarence Thomas. And I have to tell you, I believe we have more than one vote. And I'm saying this, of course, as a Christian pro-life American. I want to see Roe v. Wade overruled. I hope it will be, and I think that one day, prayerfully, I think that one day it will be. I honestly don't think that we are after Judge Kavanaugh becomes Justice Kavanaugh, I will be pleasantly surprised if we have five votes to do so. I think we still have work to do in terms of the composition of the court before Roe could actually be overruled. But I believe that pro-life Americans should be very excited about this nomination because of the sort of legislation that you're talking about now. I don't know what would happen with heartbeat legislation, but certainly with pain-capable legislation, with sex selection, abortion legislation, with informed consent laws, parental consent laws, waiting period laws, laws that require doctors to have admitting privileges at nearby hospitals and for abortion mm-hmm. clinics to maintain the same equipment and sanitation standards as you have in hospital and medical facilities, chemical abortions, all of those sorts of regulations, right. I think would easily survive without the question of whether to overrule.
Ken, I got to let the students go. Bell's ringing, class is out.
Great to be with you, Tony.
Thanks so much, Ken Klukowski, a wealth of knowledge. All right, folks, out of time. We'll revisit it, I'm sure. Much to talk about. Until next time, I leave you with the words of the Apostle Paul. When you've taken your stand, you know what to do. Just keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.